But then he nudged me and said, "Wasn't that your girlfriend?" And he didn't say it in a teasing kind of nudge-nudge you have a girlfriend way, which is one of the many cool things about him. I shielded my eyes with my hand and peered down the street, but the girl was already gone. "I'm pretty sure it was Tara," he said. "Wouldn't she have stopped if she saw us, though?" I asked, as a cold chill rose up my spine. By the way, Linda, I don't usually say things like, "a cold chill rose up my spine," but that's how it felt. And if you can't be honest with your therapist, then what's the point of therapy? Anyway, where was I? Oh, right. So now I'm all worried that maybe Tara's mad at me for something, and I try to think of what I could have done. Had I been spending too much time with Connor? Or my dad? Had I not helped her settle into town enough? Had I messed this up? "Breathe," Dad said, shaking me. "I'm sure she just didn't see us. She seemed pretty focused." Before I can explain my fears, the girl comes whizzing down the street toward us again. This time she puts on the brakes and slows down enough for us both to recognize each other. "Hey," she says, yanking off her helmet and shaking out her hair. Did I ever tell you she has really pretty hair? I probably didn't. She does, though. Dad gave us both pats on our arms and said, "I've got to run. Forgot to feed the dog." "We don't have a dog," I reminded him. He winked and strode away toward the house. I turned back to Tara, who was pulling out her earbuds. I almost said one of a few corny lines from movies that popped into my head, like, "What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?" Or, "Funny meeting you here." Or, "Looks like it's just you and me, kid." But she probably didn't have to sit through as many movies with her mom as I did over the years, and I would have sounded weird. So, instead, I rambled something dorky about it being a nice night for a ride. Then she said, "I'm sorry, but I'm in kind of a weird mood. Probably shouldn't be around people." "Is it anything to do with me?" I asked, holding my breath a little. She shook her head. "Just overwhelmed, I think. I'm trying to ride it out."
"You're sure?"
I asked, because I've learned that sometimes girls might not tell you things the first time you ask. I know that sounds bad, but it's kind of true.
"Positive," she said.
There might have been the slightest of hesitations, but I decided to take her at her word. How could she not be overwhelmed in her situation? I needed to step up the boyfriend thing by both being there for her and also giving her space.
"Is it working?" I asked.
"The biking, I mean?"
"Maybe a little," she said.
"I know something that will help," I told her. So she walked her bike between us, and I led her right to her cousin's backyard and into the pool hole where I used to practice for my bar mitzvah. We didn't take the bike down, obviously. "Everyone should have a place to be alone," I told her, as we looked up at the sky turning pink above us. "This place always calmed me down. Now it's yours. You know, until your aunt and uncle get around to putting water into it." She looked unsure, but I settled her into a cozy corner and said, "Trust me, a little while down here in the earth listening to music, and you'll feel good as new." She stuck her earbuds back in her ears.
"I'm listening to you," she said, fiddling with the buttons on her phone.
So I said, "Good. Trust me, the pool hole always works." She shook her head.
"No, I mean, I'm listening to you."
She points to her ears.
"In my head. The recording you made me for my birthday. You're singing to me."
"Well, Linda, I gotta tell you, my face got all hot and my legs felt a little shaky when she said that." Of all the songs in the world, she picked mine to make her feel better. So, what happened next, you ask? Well, Linda, that's rated PG-13, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink. Then Tara only had a few minutes before she had to be inside, so I left her to be on her own,
which was really the point in the first place.
Thanks for listening to my story, Linda. One nice thing about never actually sending you these emails is that I don't get charged money, so it's a win-win. Sincerely yours, David Goldberg.
Chapter 11. Grace.
I call Tara right after dinner. She picks up on the first ring.
I hope someone took a picture of you guys with those hats on, she says, instead of hello. I laugh.
Nope, sorry. You'll have to use your imagination.
Bummer. I was hoping to get you back for that picture you took of us in those Sunshine Kid uniforms.
I remember the day I first met Tara and Amanda and Rory, when they rang our bell selling cookies. Could that have been only a few months ago? Crazy. Thanks for the reminder to print that out. Someday you'll have to tell me the story behind it. But for now, guess what? She sighs.
In this town, it could be anything. I give up. Wait, before you tell me, let me put down the sword Emily just gave me. We're practicing for my first fencing class.
I hear some shuffling and a muffled, ouch, and careful, and sorry, and then she's back.
Okay, lay it on me.
Are you free to do something tomorrow morning? I ask.
Amanda's mom is coming over to help my mom decorate, she says. They keep asking me if I like this paint color or that carpet fabric, and I keep saying yes, and then they change it anyway. So, yes, I'd love an excuse not to be home.
Good. Then we have a date at Angelina's Sweet Repeats and Collectibles at 10 o'clock.
We do?
Yep. Angelina said there's something you need in there. Silence.
You spoke to Angelina?
Yes. Well, sort of. Not exactly. Okay, it was through a postcard. More silence. You okay? I ask. She finally says,
Did I do something wrong? Do you know?
I'm sure you didn't, I try to assure her. But it must be really important for her to have mentioned it, right?
I'm not going to sleep tonight, she says,
and I can tell from her breathing that she's pacing the room.
What if we went there now?
I look at the clock in my room. It's 7 already, not usually the time I'd be going out with my friends. It's a Friday night, though, so it's not like I have to get up early for school tomorrow. I guess we could go tonight, but my mom will probably say anything I could do now I could do tomorrow instead.
How about this? She says, I'm already at my aunt and uncle's hanging out with Emily, and your brother is upstairs with my uncle in the lab. What if Connor needed you to drop something over here, and then Ray brought us to the store and offered to take you both home?
I consider her idea. Does Connor need something?
I don't know. I'll go ask him. Hang on.
I hear shuffling, then muffled voices. A minute later, she comes back and says,
Connor would like a Three Musketeers bar.
A Three Musketeers bar? I repeat.
Yes. He says your mom has a bag in the closet for Halloween. He says it's urgent. Something about how he needs to measure the thickness of the nougat for his invention.
Yeah, I'm not buying that for a second, but I let it go. And Ray said he'd take us?
Actually, he said, no worries, mate.
Okay, I'll tell my parents Ray's going to pick me up, so have him swing by in 5 minutes.
Will do,
she says,
and thanks, I think.
It's easier than I would have thought to convince my parents to let me go off with Ray. They know and trust him from directing the play, and he's dropped Connor off after work before. Plus, his accent would charm anyone. 15 minutes later, I'm unzipping the pouch that I retrieved from my desk drawer and tossing Connor his chocolate bar in the middle of the St. Clair's living room. I've never been in their house before, even though it's right across the street from David's, where I've been tons. The house is very clean and modern. As I suspected, Connor tears open the candy bar wrapper and begins to chew. "So when do I get to see your invention?" I ask him, while Tara searches Emily's room for her shoes. According to her, as neat as the rest of the house is, that's how messy her cousin's room is.
"Roger has it upstairs in his lab," he says.
"You call him Roger?" I ask. He nods.
"We inventors are laid-back dudes. No suits and ties and formal names for us."
"So, basically, you don't want to show me?"
"Righto,"
he says, and shoves the rest of the candy bar in his mouth. Then he smiles really wide, so I can see the layer of chocolate coating his teeth. It will likely be many years until Connor gets a girlfriend. We have to pass Bailey's house on the way to the store, and Ray agrees to stop so I can invite her to come. After all her trips to the store with me, if we actually get inside and she's not with me, I'd feel terrible. As Tara and I walk up to the door, I send a message in my head to Bailey's mom so she'll let Bailey come out with us. It must have worked, because just as we're about to ring the bell, Bailey runs out in her PJs and flip-flops. "Be home by 9, her mom calls out after her. On the way into town, I tell them about today's adventure at the library. They all request a picture of the hats. I groan.
"Forget the hats. Focus on the important part."
"So you're supposed to use those metal sticks to somehow find the vortex?" Tara asks. "And then what?"
Ray parks the car on Main Street, and we climb out. "I have no idea," I admit. "Angelina said something about a gratitude offering. I don't know what that is, though." We start down the alley. The sun is setting, and a golden glow bounces off the cobblestones.
"Once when I was a wee ankle-biter,"
Ray says,
"I visited the outback with my oldies and saw people offering gratitude to their spirit animals. They were sprinkling grass seeds or nuts or rice. Then they gave thanks for guidance and protection."
"What's a spirit animal?" Tara asks.
I have no idea either.
"You pick an animal to protect you, or rather it picks you,"
he explains.
"It's supposed to embody your essence or some mumbo-jumbo like that. Give you power and strength."
"But I don't have a spirit animal."
"You can pick one,"
he says.
"How about a penguin?"
"Seriously?"
"What do you have against penguins?"
he asks.
"They're like really big birds in tuxedos. They're always ready for a fancy dance."
"I don't have anything against them, but I don't really have anything for them. I think about the ceramic bunny Amanda painted for me that sat by my bed. Maybe that would be good. But we're in front of the store now, so spirit animals, or lack of them, will have to wait. Ready, Tara?" She presses her face to the large glass window.
"Can you see anything?" she asks. "I mean, like, is anything strange or unusual going on in there?"
I peer through the window. When Tara first showed me the store, the very first day I awoke from the coma, the objects told me their stories, just like the voices of all the people I'd heard at school. All the clothes, sports equipment, faded paintings, toys. I could tell where they'd come from, why they were brought here, and where they were headed. But on every visit since, the items have been annoyingly silent. I shake my head. "Looks the same as the last time we were here."
"That's good, I guess," Tara says. "So what am I supposed to look for?"
"I bet you'll know it when you see it,"
Bailey says.
"Maybe."
She starts to chew her nail, then stops.
"Picked that up from Amanda." We hear the name Angelina and start biting our nails. "You guys really think we'll get in?"
Ray asks, jiggling the doorknob.
"Not that way."
I bat his hand away. "Hang on. I hand Tara the pouch with the key. She holds it out in front of her like it's going to bite. I reach up and put my hand on her shoulder. If we get in there and you want to leave, we'll leave, okay? She nods.
Okay, here goes.
She takes out the key and hands the pouch to Bailey, who tries to stick it in her pocket, but her pocket's too small. All of Angelina's postcards are still in there from when I hid them from Mom, so she tucks it in her sock instead. Tara closes her eyes, breathes, then puts the key in the lock, hesitates for only a second, and turns it. Click. Ray and I exchange a look of surprise. I think we were both thinking it probably wouldn't work after all. Tara pushes open the door, and the four of us stand at the threshold.
You first, I tell her.
She shakes her head.
You.
I'm game,
Ray says, and walks right through. I cringe a little, half expecting some force field to zap him, or a net to grab him and string him upside down by his ankles. But it's pretty uneventful. He finds the light switch on the wall and flicks it. Nothing happens. He flicks it up and down a few times, but the room remains bathed in only the dusky sunset.
Guess Angelina forgot to pay the electric bill,
Ray jokes. Well, that won't make this any easier, Tara says, stepping in. Bailey and I hurry behind her. Tara begins winding her way through the piles, running her hands along various objects.
I can't believe I'm in here, I shout. I'm inside the store.
I wave my arms around and twirl. Bailey joins me, and we do a part of our routine from Fiddler, where we link arms and switch places like a square dance for two.
Whoa there, little missus,
Ray says, grabbing for a coat rack covered with hats and scarves that almost topples into the aisle.
There's a lot of breakable stuff in here.
Sorry, Bailey says, writing a lampshade that had gotten caught on her foot. I look around the room, trying to make out what I can in the ever-increasing darkness. The stuff looks the same inside as it did from the window, only dustier. I pick up an old magic eight ball from a bin full of dented plastic toys. Years ago, Connor and I found one of these in Mom's old toy chest from when she was a kid. We played with it for a few months before Connor decided to smash it to see what was inside. The blue stain on Mom's favorite rug is still there 6 years later.
Will Tara find what she's looking for?
I ask the eight ball, then turn it right side up.
What does it say?
Bailey asks, peering over my shoulder. I have to shine my phone light on it to read the response in the little round window. It says, concentrate and ask again.
Figures,
Bailey says. But I close my eyes, take a deep breath, and picture a glow around whatever Tara is supposed to find. I open my eyes, intending on shaking the eight ball to find the answer, but I no longer need to see what it says, because in the far corner of the room, underneath a rolled-up carpet and a giant polka-dotted stuffed giraffe, is a box. It looks like an ordinary cardboard box with "To Donate" written across the side, but the light shining out of it fills the room.
Chapter 12. Grace.
There, I call out, pointing. Tara is too far across the room to hear me. I move toward her. There, I repeat, louder this time. She puts down the globe of the world she's been admiring and follows my finger.
I still don't see anything, she says.
Okay, so I guess the light is just for me. I still haven't come close to figuring out the rules of why sometimes everyone can see what I see, and sometimes I'm alone in it all. But now's not the time to dwell on it. I head toward the source of the light, and the others follow. Ray lifts off the carpet, Bailey grabs the giraffe, and Tara slides out the box.
"I've seen this box before," she says, examining the outside. "See? It's from a store back in my last town, and that's my dad's handwriting on the side. He must have donated this stuff when we moved, and it wound up here somehow."
"Why would Angelina want you to take your own stuff back?" Bailey asks.
"No idea," Tara says. "Let's find out."
She lifts the flaps and holds them open. We all peer in. Ray and Bailey shine their phones down on it, but I can see the contents perfectly clearly, thanks to the white glow still surrounding the box.
"My dad's old books?" she says.
She pulls them out one by one and piles them on the floor beside her.
"I saw him gathering these when we went back to the old house a few weeks ago. They're just books from his office that he doesn't need anymore. He has duplicates of most of them."
Bailey picks one up from the top of the pile. It's a well-worn dictionary. I glance at the others. Mostly, they seem to be paperback novels, and some books on the kind of subjects you'd expect a science fiction writer to have. Life in the Universe, The Spaceflight Handbook, Things That Go Bump in the Night. Tara lifts the last two books out of the box and tries to separate them. Flakes of dried glue fall to the floor. She twists the books until they finally fly apart. One of the books looks like it has pages slipping out. Tara notices, too, and pulls at the pages. What comes away in her hand is a book made out of glued-together pages. Bailey shines her phone light onto it, and Tara starts laughing.
"It's a book my dad wrote for me when I was in third grade. We all thought it had been thrown out by mistake years ago. It must have been stuck in here the whole time."
She holds the handmade book closer to the light and reads the brightly colored words on the cover.
"The day Tara the Great destroyed the zombie queen and then ate a grilled cheese sandwich."
We all laugh at the title.
"Dad used to let me illustrate the covers of the books he wrote for me," Tara says, touching the picture of a girl in a multicolored dress stomping on an oozing zombie.
The girl is adjusting her crown with one hand and eating half a grilled cheese sandwich with the other. Tara lays the book on her lap.
"It's awesome to have it back, but is this really what Angelina meant?"
"I guess it must be," I say, glancing at the discarded books. "There's nothing else in the box, right?" Tara looks back down at the handmade book, like she's not quite sure whether to be disappointed or happy that she got off easy. Ray steals away and starts swinging some golf clubs he found.
"Can I see it?"
Bailey asks. Tara hands the book to her, and Bailey starts reading through it.
"Tara," Bailey says slowly, "this is really, really good. Like, publishable good. Like, kind of brilliant and hilarious."
She smiles.
"My dad spins a great tale."
"No," Bailey says.
"You do."
Tara begins putting the other books back in the box.
"Pretty sure my artwork isn't going to be hanging in museums one day."
"But you didn't just draw the cover," Bailey says.
"Yeah, there are a few drawings inside, too," Tara says.
Bailey holds the book out to Tara.
"I mean, you didn't only illustrate it. You wrote it, too."
Tara furrows her brows.
"What do you mean?"
"Look," Bailey says, holding open the book to the first page. Written and illustrated by Tara Brennan, age 9. Tara inhales sharply, then takes the book and starts reading it. "Do you remember writing it?" I ask. She shakes her head.
"No."
Then,
"Maybe? I'm not sure. But if I could write like this, why would my parents keep that from me?"
I sit beside her and touch the open pages.
The whole story comes flying out at me. Your mother hid it, I blurt out. Your dad was going to enter it into a national writing contest for kids. She was so used to trying to keep Angelina from finding you that she couldn't take the chance that you'd win and be in the news. Tara's jaw drops. Your mom always meant to tell you, but she sort of forgot. No one could find the book, and it became easier to think she'd overestimated how good the book was, that it was probably just a typical story a smart 9-year-old would write. You hadn't written anything since, so that made it easier to believe you weren't interested anymore. I let out a deep breath. That's all I got. Tara is shaking her head. I did write, she insists, only they weren't stories. I wrote letters, dozens and dozens and dozens of long letters with stories about my childhood, or just life in general. My parents didn't know about them, though. She turns her attention back to the book and begins reading it to herself, laughing and crying and shaking her head. Bailey signals me to back away and give Tara privacy. She goes off to find Ray, bumping into a rocking chair and knocking over a shelf of plastic action figures. I head toward the counter in the back, where an object sitting beside the cash register has caught my eye. A silver ribbon encircles the top of a small gauze bag, filled with what looks like tiny brown seeds. I lift it up and feel the nice heft of it. Under the bag is a card. Greetings from Sedona, Arizona. That old gal gets around. I turn it over. There are only a few sentences.
The wheels are in motion, and they will only move forward. I can see it all the way from here. Do not forget, life is a dance between making things happen and letting things happen. I do not envy you your choice.
It doesn't make any more sense the second and third time I read it over. I'm about to show it to the others when I feel a jolt and the air ripples around me in invisible waves. I have to grab onto the edge of the counter to keep from falling over. The sensation lasts only a few seconds, and when it's done, the room feels different somehow. What the heck was that? I take deep gulps of air to steady myself and scan the room for my friends. I see Bailey first, coming toward me. Before I can ask if she's all right, she holds up a pink silk dress and asks, "Do you think I can have this?" When I'm too surprised to answer, she goes on,
"I would take out these dorky shoulder pads, of course, and I'd move the lace from the arms to the..."
I finally interrupt her. "Didn't you feel that?"
"Feel what?"
she asks, draping the dress over one shoulder. Ray joins us, the bag of golf clubs under one arm and a box with old theater playbills under the other. Tara is next, clutching her book in one hand and the huge giraffe in the other. She holds it up.
"I think my cousin Emily would like this."
Ray says,
"Hey, Grace, how do you feel about giraffes? Majestic creatures, really. Did you know they have 4 stomachs? You could do a lot worse for a spirit animal."
I look from one to the other. "Hold on. None of you felt like you were caught in a wave of air just then? Like everything shimmered and then settled a little differently?" They each shake their heads, exchanging glances.
"Are you okay?"
Bailey asks. I nod slowly, not wanting to worry them. "Being around all this stuff must have made me dizzy. We should go." The three of them make their way back to the front, following one another closely so no one trips in the dark. When they pass the coat rack that I almost knocked down earlier, Tara grabs a tall top hat and sticks it on Ray's head. They all laugh. They definitely don't sense anything is different. I still feel unsettled, though. Wish I knew what it was. The postcard is still in my hand,
I stick it in my pocket and pick up the bag of seeds from the floor where I must have dropped them. I don't know what happened back there, but it makes me even more determined to find the vortex. If wheels are in motion, I'll need to know how to stop them before they crash into whatever they're heading toward. I'm the last one out. I close the door behind me and check that it's locked. Then I glance inside one last time. The glow around Tara's box has faded, but when combined with the light from the street lamp, I can see inside pretty well. I gasp and drop the bag of seeds again. Half the items in the store are gone.
Amanda.
Dear Diary, something really weird happened a few minutes ago. I'm writing this in the car on my way home from seeing Stephanie's gymnastics meet, so I'm sorry if it's messy. I thought that going would help me take my mind off things, and I loved watching Stephanie compete. Ruby, not so much. And Tracy and Emma called me over to sit with them in the bleachers, which was really nice because I haven't hung out with them in a long time. It felt like old times. But even still, I kept wanting to send Leo a video of Stephanie's awesome back handspring or text him a picture of the bag of candy Emma brought with her. But I didn't feel like I had the right to. Anyway, so right near the end of the competition, I felt this weird cold breeze, as if a door was open right next to me. But it's not cold out, and there was no door. Then, after it passed, something felt sort of off, like kind of different. I don't know how to explain it. I asked the twins if they felt anything, but they didn't. I can't shake it, though. Since our 11th birthday, whenever anything magical has happened in town, like with Rory or Tara or Grace, Leo and I have been able to sense it. It felt almost like that, but not exactly like it. I guess Grace would have contacted us if anything big had happened. The pointer finger on my right hand is bleeding because I chewed the nail too far down. Grossness. Right now we're passing through Main Street, past the diner and the paint-your-own-pottery place. Lots of memories at that place, but I push them aside. I feel even more uneasy as Mom's car nears the corner where you'd turn to walk down the alley. Okay, I had to put down my pen for a second to catch my breath. I'm sure my handwriting is even worse now, because when we passed the alley, the car headlight shone down it a little, and I saw that the watch store on the corner was gone. Like, gone, gone. Like, no longer there at all. I have to tell the others. Or maybe stores close down all the time and it's no big deal? I mean, I never saw anyone ever go into that store, or the barber shop either. That's probably it. Just a store closing and they knocked it down because it was old and not structurally sound or whatever. Or maybe my eyes were playing tricks on me. We're almost home and I'm really tired. I'll figure it out in the morning. Rory. Rory, you will not believe the cool thing that just happened.
David, try me. Takes a lot to surprise me these days.
So, Jake just called me.
OMG, Jake Harrison, the movie hottie? Total awesome sauce.
Ha ha, very funny. And it's totes awesome sauce, but let me finish.
Sorry, couldn't resist. I've missed you.
I know. I've missed you, too.
Our lives sure have changed over the last year. Both of us going out with someone. I mean, I knew it would happen for you, but I figured I'd have my first date sometime around college.
LOL. Tara is really great, and I'm really happy for you, and I'm really glad you and I are still friends.
That's a lot of reallys, but me too. And I'm sorry that I was kind of self-absorbed these last few months with my dad and all, and a little hyper, but I'm just really happy. So, you gonna tell me what I'm not going to believe, or what?
Oh yeah, so get this. Jake had to go into the supermarket near his house to get something for his mom. She was stuck on an important phone call. Otherwise, he would never go into a supermarket alone.
Yeah, supermarkets can be scary places. I was at the Willow Falls Organic Market last week, and a frozen hamburger patty turned back into a cow and attacked me, right there in aisle 9.
Sigh. Do you want to hear this or not?
Sorry, yes, more than anything.
While I'm pretty sure that's not true, I'm going to tell you anyway. Okay, so there he is in the supermarket, and since this was a last-minute thing, he didn't have any of his disguises or any bodyguards. So what do you think happened?
Pretty sure I know this answer. He was mobbed by screaming girls while paparazzi swarmed around him taking pictures. Moms followed him through the aisles, piling up their carts with all the same things he bought, so they could tell their teenage girls later that night that they're eating the very same meal as Jake Harrison. Am I right?
Wrong, on all counts. Nothing happened.
What do you mean? Like, no cows came to life?
I mean, nothing happened. No one even gave him a second glance.
Was this market in a parallel universe where no one knew him?
Nope, just a regular supermarket.
Did he have a baseball cap covering his face?
Nope. People must have finally gotten the message that he's more than just a pretty face. He said it was like...
magic.
Yes.
No, I mean it was magic.
What do you mean?
I mean, there's no way heads aren't going to turn when the star of the biggest movie of the summer comes into a supermarket. Grace must have done it.
OMG, you're right.
The Hamburglar is never wrong.
GTG, thanks. Rory, OMG, did you fix it somehow so Jake can go out in public without being recognized? Grace, maybe. You did? OMG, I'm crying. I can barely see to type. How can I thank you? Why did you do it? How did you do it? I kept thinking about what you said the other day, about how hard it was for Jake, and you were so kind to drop everything and come with me to the library when you were dealing with Madison and her mean comments, and I thought, if only there was a way to make it so that when Jake didn't want to be recognized, he wouldn't be. It's called a glamour. It's like a mask he puts on so he looks different to other people. Like when Amanda and Leo went back in time to your birthday parties. Yes, that's how I knew I could do it, since Angelina had done it to them. He's not really changing or anything. He still looks like himself, except when he doesn't want to. I'm going to need to tell him. He'll eventually realize it's not a coincidence that he keeps going out and not being bothered by fans. I know. That will be an interesting conversation. I think he's ready for it. I think you're right. I love you for doing this. I know it's not as big a deal as giving David his dad and grandfather back, but it's going to change his life and mine. You're welcome. XOXO. Enough about me. How are you doing? Good. Working some things out. I hope it doesn't take too long to find the vortex once we're all together. Have you tried on your own? A few times on my front lawn. I held on to the handles with the rods right in front of me, but the ends didn't move, no matter what direction I turned in. They're supposed to swivel toward what you're looking for. Wherever the vortex is, it must be too far from my house for the rods to pick it up. We'll help you any way we can. I know. Thanks. BTW, is Amanda okay? It seemed like she wanted her space or whatever, so I haven't wanted to bother her. I don't know. She's been doing stuff this weekend with her friend Stephanie, and I don't want to get in the way. I got the cupcake like Angelina said, but Amanda wasn't home when I went to bring it to her house after dinner Friday. I'll make sure she got it when I see her in school tomorrow.
I'm sure she wouldn't think you're in the way. You're one of her best friends.
I know, but Stephanie is her oldest best friend, besides Leo, of course. Like, Annabelle is mine, and Bailey is yours. No matter how much you lose touch or grow apart as you get older and make new friends, no one will ever know you like the friends you had when you were little. Don't forget about them. That's your lecture of the day. Smiley face.
It's a good one. I'm going to give Bailey a call. XO.
XO. Thank you again for what you did.
Aw, shucks. It was nothing. Smiley face with the tongue out.
Tara.
Dear Julie, Uncle Roger has the best surprise for my friend Connor in the history of surprises. Remember, Connor's the one who works for my uncle after school sometimes, since he wants to be an inventor when he grows up? Well, he didn't want to wait that long, so he's been working on a super-secret project. Actually, it's a pair of 3D glasses that people who wear glasses can comfortably wear. I know this because David is working on it with him as his beta tester. That's someone who tests devices in early stages. And David told me. He and I agreed not to keep secrets from each other. Anyway, Connor showed my uncle his prototype. That's like a sample. I'm sorry if I keep explaining all the inventor lingo. And my uncle thought it was great. He suggested a few ways to tweak it, like offering a version that snaps onto your real glasses. And now he's going to help Connor find an investor. That's someone who puts money behind a product to help it get started. But the surprise is that while Connor was in school the other day, Uncle Roger hired a company to make 50 samples based exactly on the prototype so that people can start wearing them and then buzz will build around them. Buzz is like gossip, but the good kind. Like when people are all talking about something new and then everyone wants one. So, that's the big news here. Do you have plans for Halloween? I haven't dressed up since I was 9, but apparently in Willow Falls it's a big deal, so I have to come up with an outfit. WBS, Tara. P.S. I'm sorry about dumping all that stuff on you in the last letter. I feel much better. It's amazing the power of the pool hole. I can go there any time I need a break from life. I think I will be okay. P.P.S. One more thing. It turns out I'm a writer and didn't even know it. Guess you might have suspected it after you got that huge box of letters a few months ago, but I never thought of myself that way. My dad said he would help me try to get a story published someday, and that we could try to write a book together. Me equals didn't think I was good at anything special. I'm enclosing a photocopy of my first story, The Day Tara the Great Destroyed the Zombie Queen and Then Ate a Grilled Cheese Sandwich. Try not to laugh, since I wrote it a long time ago. I hope you like it. P.P.P.S. Loved the picture of your adorable dog, Rapunzel. I didn't expect her to be a black lab with such short hair. Thank you for explaining what irony means. Because I never really got that till now.
Chapter 13. Grace.
I plop down on the front lawn. 5 more minutes to go. I've had to wait a week for the others all to be free at the same time. Amanda's been busy with marching band. Tara started taking fencing lessons. And Leo's friend Vinny convinced him to try out for soccer. Basically, they've all been leading these totally normal lives, while I've been going to school during the day, then staring into the window of Angelina's store the rest of the afternoon, trying to figure out where half of everything went. Getting inside must have been a one-time deal, because the key no longer works. I didn't tell any of them about the stuff disappearing, or how panicked I am about finding the vortex. They may have promised to look out for me, but I can't expect them to drop everything all the time.
Bailey's the one person I can confide everything in. I know she's not going anywhere. Even though she obviously hadn't been camping with Leo, Amanda, Ray, Tara, and Rory the night they learned about the vortex, Bailey would have been here if her mom hadn't surprised her with tickets to a charity fashion show in River Bend. I couldn't let her turn down something like that. Connor and David weren't there that night either, and even though they offered to come with me too, I knew they'd have more fun working on Connor's secret invention, which everyone seems to know about but me, so maybe it's not that secret after all. My hand drifts up to the spot above my ear. Little tufts are just starting to grow in the bald spot. I hope my sunglasses came in handy after sacrificing a clump of hair for them. Leo arrives first, then Amanda, then Ray and Tara pull up in Ray's car, leaving only Rory still missing.
"Do you think Rory's seen the picture yet?" Tara asks, as soon as she's hopped out of the car.
Before I can ask what picture, Amanda says,
"I don't think so. We'd have heard the screams of horror."
"Remember, this is Rory we're talking about,"
Leo says.
"She's survived much worse embarrassment than this."
"True," Amanda says. "But that's when people didn't notice her. Now she's dating a movie star."
"Sort of dating,"
Tara corrects her.
"Not officially until she's older. Remember her dad made Jake sign something?"
I thought that was only a rumor, but the ins and outs of teen romance aren't something I can really relate to. "Anyway," Amanda continues, "hopefully it'll blow over and she won't find out." I notice she and Leo aren't quite meeting each other's eyes when they talk to the group.
"Sorry I'm late,"
Rory says, breathless. She drops her bike on the grass and joins our circle. "It's been a crazy morning, so I don't know if Grace told any of you guys about how we had to wear these pointy tinfoil hats last weekend." Everyone acts like they didn't hear her. Teenagers are strange.
"Maybe this will refresh your memories,"
Rory says, and pulls her hat out of her bike basket. She sticks it on her head and says, "So my mom took a picture of me wearing it because she thought it was really funny. Then this morning, Sawyer was playing with our mom's phone, and somehow, I'm still not sure how, he accidentally uploaded the picture to the internet. I can't find my phone. I know, don't say it. So I haven't been able to check where it went. Hopefully no one saw it." Ray starts whistling. Amanda picks at the grass. Tara ties her sneaker. And Leo asks,
"Does that cloud look like a moose to anyone else?"
Finally, Ray says,
"Someone's gotta tell her."
"Tell me what?"
Rory asks. Amanda and Tara exchange a look. Tara gives a slight nod. Amanda pulls out her phone and reluctantly hands it to Rory.
"Ugh, are you kidding me?"
Rory says, slapping her forehead.
"This isn't even the one my mom took."
I peek over her shoulder. It's a picture of her in the tinfoil hat coming out of the diner. She's holding a white box just big enough for a cupcake. The heading on the photo reads, "Jake Harrison's charity project has strange fashion sense." Rory lays her head down in Amanda's lap.
"There, there," Amanda says, stroking Rory's hair. "I bet you just started a trend. By next week, all the cool kids will want a hat like yours."
Rory just whimpers. Then she suddenly stops and sits up.
"Hey, soon no one will pay any attention to me again. Grace used her magic to make Jake look like an ordinary kid when he's out in public. So the next time the paparazzi stalk me, they'll see me with some random dude and think we broke up. I'll be free to do embarrassing things again, and no one will care."
The others cheer and pat me on the back. I hold up my hand.
"All right, all right. Any of you would have done the same. Now, let's talk vortex."
Leo doesn't have his mallet, so he just thumps his fist on the ground and says,
An official meeting of Team Grace, minus David, Connor, and Bailey, is now called to order. First on the agenda is to help Grace find the vortex so she can fully restore her powers.
He turns to me.
That's right, isn't it?
I nod. He continues.
So, as chairman, I ask that each of you take a moment to think back to the night of the campout at Apple Grove. What did Bucky tell us about the vortex?
I remember he said it wasn't too far from where we were sitting at the time, right? Tara asks. Around the campfire? Amanda agrees. Rory sits up and nods, too. Leo turns to Ray.
Do you remember anything else?
Ray shakes his head.
It was a long conversation. I had to fight to stay awake. Well then,
Leo says,
I guess that's all we have to go on. Sorry, Grace, I know it's not much.
That's okay. I thought maybe if you guys were all together, it would spark a memory. It sparks a lot of memories, Amanda says quietly. That was a really great night. The others nod.
Yes, it was,
Leo says, daring to look at Amanda full on for the first time this morning. I grab the dowsing rods from the ground beside me and stand. At least we know where to start. That's a lot. We pile into Ray's car and head toward Apple Grove. When we get onto Main Street, Tara says,
Emily loved the giraffe. Thanks, Grace.
About that night at the store, I begin, there's something I should tell you guys. Ray slows the car.
I don't like the sound of that. You're not going to tell me those golf clubs I took are haunted by some evil spirit, and I'll lose every round.
Nope. If you lose, it's all on you. But after we left the store that night, I saw that half the stuff inside was gone.
Did we take too much?
Tara asks, sounding worried.
I can put back that magnetic chess set I snagged at the last second. I don't even play chess.
No, it's not what you guys took. The store itself, it changed. From the front seat, Amanda gasps and whirls her head around to face the back seat. Ray gets startled by her sudden moves and screeches to a halt. Fortunately, there's no one behind us.
Holy dooly,
he says to her.
Are you all right?
Sorry, she says, but I can't believe I forgot to tell you guys. You know the watch store on the corner when you first turn into the alley?
Yeah,
we all say.
It's gone, she says. You mean it closed?
Rory asks.
Not that big a surprise.
It's more gone than that, Amanda says. Like, gone.
We're only a block away,
Ray says.
Might as well have a looky-loo.
He pulls into a spot in front of the toy store, and we all climb out. Leo falls into step beside Amanda as we head to the alley.
You just forgot to tell us? That seems like a strange thing to forget.
I know, Amanda says, but doesn't explain further. We all turn the corner together and gape. Gone is right. I was half expecting to see an out-of-business sign tacked up on the door. But the entire building is gone, like it never existed. When did this happen? How have I walked by it all week without noticing? I ask. Don't feel too bad, Rory says. That's how it can be with the magic in Willow Falls. If you're not looking for it, you usually don't notice.
Then why did Amanda see it?
Leo asks. Out of all of Team Grace, she's the most sensitive to magic, Rory says. Haven't you noticed? That's why she knew I'd met Angelina last year, and when Tara had too. Right, Amanda? Amanda nods in agreement, still staring at the alley. She's been more quiet than usual recently, so I don't want to make her more uncomfortable by putting her on the spot. Come on, guys, I say, pulling them away. I'll show you the store. Then we should really go. They follow me down the narrow alley. The shoe repair store and the barber shop are still here, empty as always. Leo begins to drag his feet.
Does anyone else feel like the walls are kind of closing in?
We slow and look around.
The alley does seem kind of narrower,
Tara says. Now that she mentions it, the stores do seem closer to one another than before. There's barely room for us all to walk side by side now.
This is super creepy,
Ray says.
Let's hurry and get out before we're turned into pancakes. Pancakes,
Leo says, rubbing his belly. Rory grabs him by the sleeve and drags him along. See? I say, pointing in the store window. Then it's my turn to gasp. It's even emptier than it was before. Much more.
Wow,
Tara says, her eyes wide.
Where did everything go?
I can only shake my head.
Did someone break in?
Ray asks, trying the knob. It's as locked as ever.
No offense,
Leo says,
but who would want this stuff? It's mostly junk, right?
It will open doors to wonders unimagined, I whisper.
Huh?
He says. That's what Angelina told me in the letter she left for me with the key. He shakes his head.
Guess I can't see it.
I want to argue that all this stuff meant something to someone once, but it's no use. Most of it's gone now, anyway. But where? And why? And how? Amanda shivers. Let's get to Apple Grove before anything else weird happens, okay?
Race you to the car,
Ray says, and we all take off at a run. 10 minutes later, we're hiking up the path to Apple Grove. The baby trees are only slightly larger than the last time I was here, the morning of David's bar mitzvah, the morning my life changed forever. Amanda and Leo give the trees loving pats as we pass by, occasionally stopping to straighten one out or push some more soil around the base. The fountain in the middle is in better shape than I remember. They must have done some work on it. I follow them to the fire pit and pull out the dowsing rods.
Do you know how to use those?
Tara asks. I was reading up on it, I tell her, as I adjust my grip on the handles. First, I need to know what direction I'm facing.
That's easy,
Leo says.
There's a compass on the edge of the fountain, see?
He points to a metal plate attached to the rim of the bowl.
Right now, you're facing south.
Thanks. Okay, so then, basically, I hold them out like this, parallel to the ground, and they swivel around in my hands when I move. They're supposed to straighten out when I'm heading in the right direction. Then, when I reach the energy source, in this case, the vortex, they're supposed to stretch open wide in both directions.
That's a lot of supposed tos,
Ray says.
Way to boost her confidence,
Tara scolds. Ray holds up his hands.
Don't get your knickers in a knot. I was just kidding.
Tara tries to kick him, but he jumps back.
You said the rods can find things other than energy centers, right?
Leo asks.
Like oil or water or gold?
I nod.
Well, if you don't find the vortex, maybe focus on the gold. Buried pirate gold.
There aren't any pirates in Willow Falls, Amanda says.
Sure, he says, not now, but maybe the town was closer to water once. There was that river, at least until your great-great-great-grandfather dammed it up.
The corners of her mouth quiver, and I can tell she's trying not to smile. It was your great-great-great-grandfather who dammed up the river.
Oh, you sure?
Guys, Rory says, can we focus, please? Sorry, Amanda says.
Sorry,
Leo mutters. I take a deep breath and close my eyes. Vortex of power, I whisper to the rods.
Guide me to the vortex of power. I open my eyes, and in slow, measured steps, begin to move forward. The rods sway gently back and forth along with my movements, but don't straighten out. I turn west and try again. They don't begin to straighten out until I turn north. Leo begins to laugh. All the girls shush him.
Sorry,
he says.
It's just that you're facing the mall now. What if the vortex is inside the gap? Or, wait, I bet it's in the food court. The vortex could be inside Panda Pavilion.
A panda would make a fine spirit animal,
Ray says cheerfully. Hush, Rory says. The vortex isn't in the food court.
You're probably right,
Leo says, turning serious. Then he blurts out,
I bet it's in the underwear department at Macy's.
This time, when Tara kicks, she doesn't miss. Leo yelps. I'm sure the vortex is not in the mall, but still I'm relieved when I walk a few steps north and the rods swing to the right. I quickly turn east and walk forward. The rods immediately straighten out. I look like Frankenstein's monster, with the rods sticking straight out in front of me like really skinny arms. The others shout and gather around. I take another deep breath, focus my thoughts again, and begin to walk. It only takes a minute before we enter the woods. There's no path, but the trees, a mix of evergreen, birch, and elm, are wide enough apart that it's easy to pass through them. The ground slopes gently upward, and we follow it.
Hey, Leo says, this is near where Amanda's and my ancestors lived. When we went back in time and saw them as little kids, this was the direction they came from.
And I think the road that leads to Angelina's house is on the other side of these woods, too,
Tara says.
We've just never approached it from this side before.
Sounds like a good place for a vortex to me, Rory says. It's beginning to feel like the dowsing rods are pulling me now instead of leading me. The tug gets stronger and stronger until I'm stumbling after them.
Anyone else notice the smell? Amanda asks.
The second she mentions it, the smell hits me and everyone else at the same time. Apples. This isn't the usual, the air smells like apples when magic is around kind of thing. This is for real. We look around as we continue hurling ourselves forward. There haven't been apple trees here in decades. Where is the smell coming from? A minute later, we burst through the trees and stumble into a small clearing that I'd never have guessed was up here. The dowsing rods spread wide open, like they're opening their arms to embrace a welcome guest. We have arrived.
Chapter 14. Grace.
The six of us stand in a row and stare at the lone tree in the center of the clearing. The surprising part isn't that it's an apple tree, but rather that it's got to be the strangest apple tree that ever existed anywhere on the planet. Ever. For one thing, its branches, which start about 10 feet above the ground, don't extend outward in all directions like you'd expect. Instead, they curl around the trunk, like the tree knows some big secret and is hugging itself to contain it. As twisted as the branches are, they are still dripping with apples. Ripe, red, full, juicy apples. The source of the smell, for sure. The power here thumps through the ground. I can actually feel it pulsing through me. I look at the others and know they feel it too. Not as strongly as I do, but they feel it.
What do you do now? Rory asks, resting her hand on my arm.
The rods swing back to their neutral position. I kneel